Why did Hashem create us as to start off as babies and have a process of maturing into adults, not have us be born as fully formed adults like Adam and Harishon?
I think that the Chovos HaVavos says that if you compare human babies, human newborns, newborns in the animal world, so in most respects, we have an awful lot in common with animals. It's not such a complimentary or comforting thought, but it is true. I don't know, physically we're, okay, so we sort of speak a different language than they do, and we walk in a different way than they do, but all of our physical needs and all of our physical urges are very similar to the animal world. In one area, there is divergence, which is that the period of dependence that human newborns have upon their parents is much longer and much more extended than the period of dependence that animal newborns have on, I don't know if the father really hangs around there, but the mother does, have on their mother. And of course, the Chovos HaVavos says the pshat is calls man that a person experiences a sense of dependence upon his or her parents, a person is also much more amenable and open and receptive to chinuch, to guidance from the parents. And the more independent a person feels, so the less open and receptive a person is to teaching and instruction and guidance, right? Very few people are as noted to be cautious to what their parents tell them at age 20 as they were at age 10 or as they were at age 5. That's the reality. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed the world that there should be chinuch, that there should be an extended tkufa where children, again, not just grow to physical independence and maturity, but grow to with a sense of religious and spiritual direction. So he made us dependent for a longer tkufa on our parents. That's what the Chovos HaVavos says.
How does one
believe
the relationship between doing their control of their own actions and Hashem influencing everything? And now, like an example being, if someone's walking on their phone and not paying attention, and they trip on something and break a bone, how are they to look at, I made a mistake here, I was foolish, but also that maybe it was its own Hashem that I should break a bone. So where does that balance lie in terms of one's own actions and through its own Hashem?
Well, that was an easy example, thank you. Much as we like to do it, and much as we do it, there's zero basis for blaming Ribbono Shel Olam for our own mistakes. when doesn't a person not look where he's going because he's on his phone? But 99% of the time, when we walk around looking at our phone, not looking where we're going, if we walk into a wall, no, it isn't so much that we walk into a wall. It's our own fault. There's no gamzul l'tov here. There's no kol ma'aseh rachmanim l'tov aved. The kol ma'aseh otem b'nei adam is often foolish and ridiculous and uncalled for. When a person does what he's supposed to do, when a person makes the hishtablus he's supposed to make, so then it's an ashamayim. A person takes the health precautions he's supposed to take for himself, for his children. And a person gets sick, okay, so he can say that's its own Hashem. But what's self-inflicted is not, it's its own Hashem that we should have the bechira to be able to do that. On that level, everything is its own Hashem. But more directly, it's just self-inflicted.
Following up that question, is there a difference if someone else were to do something to me? Someone else is bechira, can affect me. And
meaning you were looking where you were going, but he's riding his bike and texting, and he's not looking where he's going. So that is a major dispute amongst the Rishonim. That's a major dispute amongst the Rishonim, whether one person's Bechira Chavshes can impact another person if it wasn't decreed that other person should have to endure it. The Ramban in some places, the less famous places, the Ramban in some places, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh and others would say that unless the person is on a very, very high madrega, that yes, someone else's bechira can impact him. Ein l'tov, ein l'mutov. The Chovosal Vava, the Sefer HaChinuch, would say no, there is no such thing. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't interfere with the other person's bechira, but if the other person if the other person wants to punch you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make sure that he misses. And if he connects, so then it is nigzar, not that he should punch you, but it is nigzar that the person should have to, that the person was supposed to endure that pain. And if the other guy wouldn't have thrown the punch, so then the person for whom it was nigzar would have tripped. So it's a major focus we've shown in understanding Hashkach.
הגרמנים מחשמם עשו את זה מכוח עצמם בעצם כי יש להם בחירה חופשית או לא?
אז להבהיר שתי נקודות. הנקודה הראשונה, אפילו לפי ודאי שהם עשו מה שהם, לכל הדעות, הם עשו מה שהם עשו מבחירה חופשית שלהם. לכל הדעות. החילוקי דעות שהצבענו עליה קיים לגבי היחיד. לגבי הציבור, שם גם כולם מודים שיש תמיד יש השגחה פרטית ציבורית. האם יש תמיד יש השגחה פרטית ליחיד, אז שם זה שנוי במחלוקת יסודית בין הראשונים. אבל שלגבי הציבור, השואה היה אסון ציבורי, לא אסון להמון יחידים, זה היה אסון ציבורי, השם בוודאי שיש עניין של השגחה, לא עניין של השגחה שכפתה על כל הנאצים מחשמם לעשות מה שהם עשו, אבל השגחה שמטעמים כמוסים שאנחנו לא מצליחים לעמוד עליהם, שהרשתה מה שעשו.
Is it possible that there's a Gemara in Brachos that the schar for going to shear is the pressure in the shear, and Rashi says that you don't get reward for the actual Talmud Torah unless you're able to repeat it over later? How would that misstate with the Rambam that said that the reward of the pressure of the difficulty of learning itself is learning? Wouldn't the pressure itself be then considered learning as well?
Agud the Kala Zuchka, Agud the Perka Viyasa. So the Gemara says that the schar you get for going to the shir is for the schar for running to the shir. So it's true. Rashi does say she'enam yodem lahamit shmosam achazman. That's something like that. Rashi says. The pashtus is that what Rashi means by that is that the reason that the person can't remember what he never understood with the Shaitan. A person can hope as Hashem to remember what he understood, but what a person didn't understand, he can't file away. If someone gets up here and recites Japanese poetry, even if you've got a wonderful memory, you're not going to be able to, I don't think you're going to be able to, recall the poetry. So Rashi says, Rashi means that there wasn't Talmud Torah, that maybe for whatever reason, Rashi says, just the showing up, even if nothing else, for Chazal telling us that's also
being born Jewish and growing up in a Jewish life, all I hear is like Judaism. Is there an Indian of searching other religions and seeing if they're true? Because I've been growing up and all I hear is Judaism and I believe completely. All the Tainas and Kuzaris all make perfect sense, but is there an Indian of searching other religions and maybe they make sense or something like that?
Sometimes, are you a swimmer? Do you swim? Really? You can have someone who's such an expert and powerful swimmer that he can swim, I don't know, a mile or two out from the shore. And even though the further away you get from the shore, the stronger the currents get. But he's an accomplished enough swimmer and a strong enough swimmer that he can handle it and he can get back. You can have someone who's not a good enough swimmer or strong enough swimmer to even think about swimming that far out. They're both okay. Then you can have someone who's a good enough swimmer to swim out, but between the fatigue that sets in and between the strength of the currents there, isn't equipped to deal with those currents, and he's going to be in big trouble. It's easier to ask questions than it is to understand answers. If a person doesn't have questions, if a person is zocha to see the truth of Yahadus, and is not bothered with any questions, so then it's an issue of los asura chareda vavchem to gratuitously pose questions, because for the very simple reason that again, a person may be a good enough swimmer to swim out, a person may be bright enough, keen enough to ask questions, but that doesn't mean that if he's bright enough to ask the question has an answer. Some of the question doesn't have an answer. The guy who swam out, it's possible to swim back, but he may not be able to do it. The person can be bright enough to ask a question, but not bright enough to figure out the answer. If a person has a question, okay, he can't stifle the question. He can't suppress the question. He should find the right people to go to, and he should present his questions, and you know, and be enlightened and get the correct responses. But a person is never ever supposed to gratuitously ask questions about Yisod HaSa'amuna. If a person isn't bothered, he's not supposed to gratuitously ask questions.
Is it not a bit subjective to ask someone
in their religion
about a different one?
I'm sorry, a little
bit louder,
please.
Is it not a bit subjective to ask someone that you trust about like a different religion that is he probably doesn't know is good? Like,
No, it's not the question of asking him. The question is why if if a person's been brought up on Yahadus and the person has had the blessing and the advantage of, unlike Yisrael, not having to take a tour of every Avodah Zarah in the world before discovering the truth, but has been put on the fast track to the truth. So why should he be asking anyone about all the non-true religions? Not a question of why am I asking my Rav, as opposed to why is he asking anyone? Why is he if a person has questions, he should ask the questions. If a person doesn't have questions, he shouldn't look to generate questions. If a person has questions, he absolutely... There's no such thing as a bad, sincere question. The question is sincere, and the question deserves to be asked and answered. But if the question is just sort of out of reckless... The same way a person needs to be disciplined in other areas of life, a person has to be disciplined in matters of health, in matters of eating, in matters of sleeping, etc. A person is supposed to be disciplined intellectually also. If I know Torah is true, might I be curious about what happens in such and such a religion? I might, but I might be curious about what a cheeseburger tastes like also, but it's not something that a person should experiment with. Let me taste that cheeseburger, and then I'll mumish understand why the Torah doesn't want me to eat cheeseburger. It doesn't work that way. Is that clear?
Is there an advantage to keeping up with news or world news?
That a person should devote non-recreational time to it. As everyone, almost everyone, 99% of the population needs downtime, right? So we're talking about what one does in one's downtime or what potentially could be uptime. So in terms of... In terms of the downtime, it depends what the news is. Where are you from?
I live here now, but
okay. So it could be Denver is a more civilized place. I live in New York, which is not so civilized. So the rumor of the news in New York is about how many people got killed in the past 24 hours, which is not especially edifying or morally uplifting. But again, I'm sure Denver is a much more civilized place. if it's not just listening to a litany of accounts of violence, but it's more the substantive news, it's a valid form of relaxation when a person needs a break. For the most part, what a person needs to know in terms of diverting uptime, when a person is in a position to be using his time for, I don't know how much time should be diverted from that, because what a person needs to know, by and large, a person cares about. Everyone knows what's going on with regard to that there are imminent elections in this country, whether you read the paper daily or not, and some of the various plots and subplots associated with that. Even if one's not a bookie, and all the newspapers, I think the basic outlines, we usually find out about. So it's more of a within correct boundaries. It's more of a legitimate form of relaxation and recreation than it is something which is so so necessary, because it's all in the ear. I don't know, was anyone in, there was no one in the United States who was unaware of impeachment and the trial in the Senate, you know, whether you, you know, whether one had a tree of peace to read the New York Times article day in, day out. Either way,
Did I get the same by Jewish news?
It's a person certainly should know what's going on with Kali Yisrael. Again, whether that happens naturally or not, I don't know. To a degree, I think it happens naturally there also. But it's certainly an opinion that a person has to be identifying with what's happening to the tzibur, the home of Yom Shehem, especially for Ben Kutzah, to know what's happening in Eretz Yisrael. Certainly supposed to be identifying with what's happening.
Rabbis recommend y'all learn about the theory of the means for appearance of Shas on the Yeshiva. I can't overwhelm it, but I got a Yeshiva. I recommend it.
The answer probably, not probably, does vary depending upon the individual. So I don't think there's a definite yes or a definite no to that question. I think for some people the answer will be yes, and for some people you're talking the answer is no.
What factors should a person consider when deciding what to do professionally?
So the first factor is that a person wants to, not want, a person is supposed to live as productively as possible. A person is supposed to be as productive as possible as he can in life. There are some professions which are besides the meaningfulness of being honest to Shabbos for honest panosa, which is very, very meaningful in and of itself. There are some which additionally are also just intrinsically meaningful, not just as a means, but to earning an honest paycheck, which a person is, which a person is supposed to do. There are others that are also intrinsically meaningful. If a person has the kochos hanefesh for what's also intrinsically meaningful, and he could go either way. So then, he certainly wants directed energy to those avenues which are intrinsically meaningful. Intrinsically meaningful can obviously have lots of thought. It can mean professions which basically consist, if they practice the right way, of doing chesed. If that's not where a person co-codes life professionally, then that's totally fine. That's the way it ends well who wants it. And there's nothing second-rate about that. Then other considerations besides that to look at is a person has to look at the time demands that different professions make on him. There are some jobs in some locales which I don't know, let you earn an awful lot of money, but you're not even going to have time to count the money. You're going to have to hire an accountant. You'll have plenty of money to hire the accountant, but you're going to have to hire an accountant to count the money because you're going to be working so hard, you won't even have time to look at your bank statement. Halachas kama v'kama, be learning and be doing chesed and being mechanech for children and the cool. So a person certainly looks at what the life work balance is in a certain profession. A certain person looks at what the work environment is. Some work environments are more physical and others are more wholesome. if a person is in a position to do so, a person certainly has to weigh what professions are transferable to Eretz Yisrael and would work here as well, as opposed to one which maybe is in lesser demand here and only makes sense in Chutz La'aretz. And in all of these deliberations, I think the Gemara says in Brochus on the topic of the Sakol Osa Yofer Be'ita, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the world needs, let's say, in our modern reality, so the world needs people who are computer specialists, and the world needs doctors, and the world needs engineers, and the world needs mechanchim. So how do HaKadosh Baruch Hu see to it that the world should be able to function on all fronts? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us different strengths and different interests. And what a person likes to do is, again, not the sole indicator. It has to be checked against other things, but that is certainly one factor and one indicator of you have people who are doctors, and you ask them, would you like to be an accountant? They faint. Have people who are accountants, they ask them, would you like to be a doctor? So they faint. Well, maybe everyone's on the floor fainting, but okay, let the doctor be a doctor, but they can't be an accountant, then shalom al yisrael. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us with different inclinations and different things we enjoy.
Just
mean to accomplishing mitzvot, and if it's more than that, then why do we set aside Talmud Torah to perform on mitzvot? So again, as you have a cloud that whenever the Gemara has an Evaya, even if the Gemara isn't explicitly posh at the Evaya, if there's an intimacy alone on one part of the Evaya, it means the Gemara was posh. So clearly, in case of your question, you were partially correctly. That Talmud Torah is not only a means to know halacha l'maaseh. Why is it then that if there's a mitzvah she'efshar la'yachus ha'yedei acherim, the person's master Talmud Torah, because the Talmud Torah, again, one of the qualities Talmud Torah has to have is it has to be a menas la'aseh. It can't be that I'm going to learn and be the biggest bucky in Masechta Sukkah. But no, I don't sit in the sukkah. That's not my thing. I don't do that. It can't be that a person learns Shalom Menas Lasso. When a person learns of Menas Lasso, it's Shalom Menas Lasso, so that's a post-fail in the learning itself. So Mamela, whenever there's a mitzvah, she actually offers a day of heaven, so the person has to be, not pick on the ground.
How does the idea of Tila, how do you believe that Tila has some kind of impact, how does that fit into the idea of an overall divine plan as independent of our...
And I don't know that the overall divine plan is independent of our actions. I'd say it's the Machlokes Tanoim, and the view that the Rambam chooses to record in Hilchos Tshuva is that Ein Yisrael Megala Mavo V'Tshuva. Now he does add Tov Kedei Dibur that for Hivticha Torah Shesof Yisrael Lasos Tshuva. So it's not a question of whether there's going to be a Gula Asida. There is going to be a Gula Asida, but the divine plan is not. It's not independent of our actions. But the way the Koach of Tefillah is not to persuade HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what's right, he knows what's wrong. Tefillah changes us. When a person davens sincerely, they say something about Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov says that if a person is the same after davening as he was before davening, then he didn't daven. But he did mean it, and he did say it on other levels. The way tefillah, you know, is one of those things which is ma'avira as well as hagzera, is the way we change in the tefillah, the way we're machniah ourselves before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way we recognize our dependence upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the tshuva, which is often reflected in the tefillah. That's where the koach of tefillah lies. It's not when you when you talk to a person. So the goal can be not to change yourself. The goal can be to persuade the person that the person should change his mind. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't change his mind. So tefillah is not an attempt again at HaKadosh Baruch Hu to change his mind. Tefillah is an attempt to change the facts on the ground so that memela, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu then dictates, will be different. Because what he dictates is in response to what the facts on the ground are. So when a person doesn't, the change that happens is, because Rosh doesn't change his mind, but if the person changes himself, so then a different course of action may be called for.
So in that case, one, why would tefillah be affecting others as well? And if we daven for someone else, how would our changing affect them? And if that's so, if the main idea of tefillah is to change ourselves, why does it seem like the bulk of the request, the bulk of the most important part of tefillah, aka Shemona Esrei, seems to be request? If the idea is not to, if the idea is to change ourselves, we shouldn't be better reflected as dinoy or something that's more prone to self-reflection than.
So those are both great follow-ups. The first one is more difficult to get a handle on. Probably the answer is, there's certainly, again, the facts are as you the facts are as you present them, there is such a thing as effectively davening for someone else. Practically, maybe not conceptually, but practically there is such a thing. It's Pesukim in Chumash, right? Avraham Avinu davened for Avimelech, Moshe Rabbeinu davened for Miriam. There certainly is such a phenomenon. The Maharal in the Siv HaAvoda seems to question whether there is such a thing. When you read what he says, it doesn't make any sense. When is there such a thing? It's Tzukim Mechunsh. So Chassam Sofer has a tshuva where he explains that what the Maharal means is that conceptually, there's no such thing as davening for someone else. Conceptually, let's say Ruvain Ben Yaakov is sick, and someone asks me, can you daven for Ruvain Ben Yaakov? And I don't feel any empathy for Ruvain Ben Yaakov, but I figure, hey, I might as well be a nice guy. They ask me to say, I can fit the filling. Not so much skin off my back, so I'll say, I can fit the filling. But there's no empathy. I don't share in the pain. I'm not pained by his pain. Maharal says, Chassam Sofer explains that this is what the Maharal means. And after you read the Chassam Sofer, you see that that's what the Maharal was saying. That is no such thing as. That's what the Maharal was saying. Yitachin is no such thing as that. Yitachin, that the basis for davening for someone else is a sense of of connection. And the sense of identification, in which case, yes, practically you daven for someone else, but conceptually, it's the person himself is sick over the other person's sickness, as in Raya Levine, our knee hurts. So that's in terms of the first question. In terms of the second question, the significance of Bakasha is. Let's say a child goes with his or her parents to a toy store. So the child wants so many things that he sees. So he's always tugging on tugging on the father's jacket, on the mother. You know, can you buy me this? Can you buy me that? So what's the... So he knows that they usually say no. Maybe they'll say yes about one or two things, but everything else... So why doesn't he just buy it himself? What is he asking him for? Why doesn't he just buy it himself? So the answer is that his parents have this magic plastic card. For some reason, you show the plastic card, and boom, and they let you walk out of the store whatever you want. And he doesn't have one of those magic plastic cards. So the Les Brave, he's got a handle with, he has the handle with his parents. The significance of Bakosha, and the reason Bakosha is so important, and the Dovah only Beruma Shal Olam, is because it reflects an underlying acknowledgement of total and absolute dependence upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I thought I could ensure my parnasa on my own, so I wouldn't need a bracha of Baruch Aleinu. And if I thought I could ensure my supply of Chochma, Bina, and Das on my own, I wouldn't need to ask. The same way, if the kid thought he could buy the toys himself, he wouldn't be negotiating with his parents. So Bakosha is so significant because of what underlies the Bakosha, because of that underlying acknowledgement and awareness of the absolute dependence that a person has on a kind of
role. And there's a contradiction in the part of it, contradiction in the Gemara between Hazal and modern day science. How are we supposed to do that contradiction? And sometimes it does affect the halacha, how are we supposed to, what are we supposed to do?
There are very, 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 very few examples which have any which touch upon halacha l'maaseh. In general, a person is supposed to, a person can have a question sometimes and not know the answer. So then a person doesn't draw any conclusions on the question. So not every question about apparent conflicts between Torah and science do we know the answer to. A person, again, with... It's not a coherent position to stop being the vapor of science entirely. You know, you can't take out your cell phone and schmooze with your friend on the cell phone and tell him how science is all. It's nothing. It's not entirely consistent. So it's not a coherent position to deny advances and discoveries of science. Me'idah gisa, you can't lose a science course in a college, or I assume the same thing is true in high school, a textbook from 5 years ago, because it's full of errors and it's full of inaccuracies, and because they've discovered so many things that that they now, what yesterday was emes lamita, today is wrong and has been discarded. So a person can and should respect science, but not be so misspelled from it. Not just on the spoil. And there's zero reason for a Ben Torah to feel on the defensive when there's a question. Maybe we know the answer to it, maybe we don't know the answer to it. And where will the answer come from? I don't know, maybe we can guess, maybe we can't guess. But it's okay to have questions that we don't know answers to, there are lots of things we don't know.
Correct, or that they were basing it off the knowledge of that area.
What? Which type of comments of Chazal? In what context?
Certain comments that we know for sure today are
untrue.
Most
again,
most
again. Okay, so the Rashi already says that we don't follow those Gemaras in Gittin. Whether what Chazal said in a non-halachic context reflects on Masorah and just we don't understand it, or whether it didn't reflect on Masorah, is that there is a very heated and passionate disagreement about that. Certainly whatever they say in the halakha context, Kristen can't and doesn't change any halakha because we don't understand how it stems with modern science. And in terms of what they said in the non-halakha context, so there's a difference of opinion as to where that came from. I think the number is, we don't know exactly how things are going to happen, how things are going to unfold. And it's not Ikai Adas to know how things are going to happen and unfold. We know that there's going to be a Yemosa Mashiach, and that the central figure in Yemosa Mashiach is going to be Melech HaMashiach. And the rest of the details, I think he even says that Chazal didn't even have Kabbalahs on all these things. And the rest of the things are not Ikai Adas to know exactly how, where, and when. Some things we know unmistakably. I'm not saying it goes or not goes with Hulu. But in terms of Tatum, we don't know. How much the person has to stop to discriminate against the local advice. I mean, understand where that, you know, what effect is the issue of letting this
I'm not sure.
I didn't say anywhere that it's also look at the Shulchan Aruch and see what the Halach and the Mice in this case Shainim is, what's the Black Series? Shalom HaKosh Mishmah. Just the question. We'll have to look at the din and say that it's awesome. So. How much of a focus should it be? It is not supposed to be learned differently and is not at odds with the learning with the Iyun. The way the Rambam came to the Halacha L'maaseh was learning through the Sugyas and coming to Havana and coming to a conclusion. And that's the same way Rabbi Natan did it, and that's the same way the Rosh did it. And try to understand Allah HaMai, so that's the same direction from which we should be coming and trying to understand Allah HaMai. So the difference is it's not a competing style of learning, or at least it's not supposed to be. It's just the difference is, do I start with the Rashi and Tosfos and Rambam, or do I open up the Shulchan Aruch and see, okay, so the Machlokes is the Rambam and Tosfos and the Gemara. So, and how was the Mechaber Machriya in Shulchan Aruch? It's not a competing style of learning.
Back to the
obscure
question.
Okay.
I know you
Again, so it is a difference of opinion. There are two schools of thought. Within the school of thought, that a person's, one person's bechira can impact another person. So I think that when the Forshim say that it obviously there's going to be a difference between Israel to, I don't mean to trivialize, but just to magnify the point, to make it easier to understand, there's going to be a difference between a person, Ruvain may not have the hashgacha that will make HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, intervene and prevent Shimon from stepping on his toe, but that requires a higher level of hashgacha that Ruvain may not have, but he may have a higher level of hashgacha that would prevent Shimon from killing him, not just stepping on his toe. So that there is a whole spectrum in terms of how the bechira, I think some of the, okay, maybe this will be the last question, yeah?
The relevance of Torah is not dependent upon its
practical application. The highest level on which a person lives life is the level of machshava. The lowest level on which a person lives life is on a level of nisa, and in between that is the level of diwa. The highest level on which a person lives life is on the level of machshava in the olam of machshava. In the olam of machshava, the idea is its own relevance. So the understanding, the idea of Torah is its own. That is its goal. I think you tell a story about Rav Chaim that he was once mesupik about what pshat in the Gemara was. Someone asked him what's in Afkamina. The answer in Afkamina is Pshat Nagimah. But sometimes you need to give a practical Afkamina if it's not clear that what you're saying is really conceptually two different things. If it just seems to be different words saying the same thing, so then you have to concretize with an Afkamina. But if it's clear that conceptually it's two different things, that's what Chaim says, the Afkamina. What's the practical relevance? Practical medicine is probably going to that's what's practical. Thank you very much.